Okay, so good morning. So first, a brief logistics announcement. So exam grades are posted. They're on the gradebook, which I now have linked at the top of the website since people couldn't find it, understandably. Those are the grades after we did a rubric adjustment, where what I did basically is I looked through the exam. I said, what questions do I think someone who I want to give a C would get wrong? And I made sure that was a C. The exams are on TPEX with the raw grades. You can submit regrades there. Please try to do it like within a week. Keys are on Colab in the resources folder. Please note that a very small number of people who've been sick or things like that haven't taken the exam yet, so I'd appreciate it if you like let them not accidentally discover what the exam questions were for a couple days. Yes?
Do you know the average on the exam?
I posted the stats on Colab. The median was around an 83. 75th percentile was around an 89. 25th was around a 75, 76. After the rubric, yeah. Okay, so today we're gonna go on to optimizing our processor. So we talked about building a single cycle processor where every instruction takes this one single cycle. And it turns out that our processor design, it works, it's easy to build, it's straightforward to understand when things happen in instruction execution, and that there's this single rule that's the same for every instruction. But it turns out that it's particularly inefficient, and that there's a thing our design will allow us to do which will make it a lot faster. So I'm going to start by illustrating this with an example of something which is not a processor, but we're going to talk about the same sort of technique we're going to use for our processor. So I need to do some laundry. I have a load of light colored and dark clothing. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna take my light colored clothing and I'm gonna put it in my washer. I'm gonna wait a while for that to happen. That to go get washed. And the washer's gonna tell me it's done. I'm gonna take it out of the washer, put it in the dryer. I'm gonna wait a while for the dryer to do things. Then I'm gonna take it out of the dryer, fold it all up, and whew, finally done with that first load of laundry. Now I can start the second one. So I'm gonna take my second load of laundry, my dark colors, I don't want to mix, you know, have all my white clothes get stained. So I'm gonna put that in the washer, I'm gonna wait for that to finish. Then I'm gonna take that out of the washer, put it in the dryer, and then finally I'm gonna fold that, and then I've done my two loads of laundry. So does anyone do their laundry this way? A couple people, does anyone have a better way? They think something I should be doing instead. Yeah.
Two machines?
Like,
you have multiple washers or dryers, I guess. You put all.
So, if I had multiple washers, I could do them both at the same time in the same way. Any other idea?
Put the colors in as soon as the whites.
Yeah, so I have this wasted time here where the washer isn't doing anything. And we, you know, I think most people, if you have multiple loads of laundry to do, you're not just gonna sit there staring at your load of laundry saying, gosh, can't do anything with this, well, I'm ready for that to dry. You're gonna put it in the washer. And so that's what I'll do. And then in the same amount of time, I can do three loads of laundry, not just two. So this is the basic game we're gonna get from pipelining. We're gonna observe that if we look carefully at our single cycle processor design, we're doing this kind of wasted time where we're saying, nope, I can't use the data memory. Sorry, I know you have this other instruction coming up that needs it, but right now I'm using it for this push instruction. I can't use it for MR move queue yet. Even though if we look at when we're actually doing the work, it might not actually be the case that we need to wait. So we're gonna make that happen. So one observation you'll have with this, so this improved the amount of time that I could do my loads of laundry. So I got more loads of laundry done in the same amount of time. And I had a bit of waste in this process. So this is not perfect, and we won't expect it to be perfect. So in this case, in this diagram, you know, my washer is a little faster than my dryer. So I have this bit of wasted time here. So what's happening is, you know, that I have to wait for the dryer to catch up. And so the speed at which I can do loads of laundry depends on the dryer. And you would know that realistically, it probably looks more like this. Probably my dryer is not super fast. So I have a lot of waste. So I'm still doing things faster, but I'm really depending on the slowest component here. So I have this dryer, takes a certain amount of time. I don't really have a way of, with what I have, of making that faster. Like maybe I could have two dryers or something like that. But with what I have, I just need to wait in line behind that. And the slowest component in my process here determines my total speed. And we'll see that in our processor. The slowest piece we have is going to determine how fast we actually go. It doesn't matter that my washer is really fast. And it won't help if I decide, gosh, I'm really slow at doing laundry. I'll get a washer which is twice as fast. If I do that, not going to help. I'm still going to be spending essentially the same amount of time doing laundry. And another thing you can observe here is that I actually made doing each load of laundry slower. So I got more laundry done, but I'm spending, in this case, 2.1 hours to do a single load. That's looking at when do I start doing it? When do I get to take the load out of my laundry basket and put it in some machine? To when is my clothes ready to be put away? And if I only cared about how fast can I do a single load of laundry, I can do better than that. So if I only care about that, the dryer's ready right away. I don't need to wait for it. And so I would wait 1.8 hours. So I've actually made each of my loads of laundry slower, but I'm getting more laundry done. And for our processor, this is what we want. We want to do instructions, and I don't particularly care if it takes a while to execute a particular instruction, because when you're saying my program is slow, you aren't saying, gosh, that push instruction's really slow. You're saying, gosh, this function which executes thousands or tens of thousands of instructions just taking a really long time. So this is what we want for our processor, because we don't care about how long individual instructions take. And we're going to be fine even if our design makes them a lot slower, as long as we get more of them done over an amount of time. So this, from when I start to when I finish, I'm going to call this latency. So anything that measures that. Sometimes we might measure these quantities in terms of a rate, but when we're measuring latency, we mean we were talking about time from start to finish without taking into account other things we might be doing at the same time. This is the time for one thing to get done, from beginning to end. Another way of looking at it is, let's say I'm running a laundry business, and what I care about is my customer comes in with a load of laundry and I want to give it back to them as soon as possible. This is what I optimize to make that customer feel the best about my turnaround time, even if what I'm doing might not be optimizing how much laundry I do in total. So the rate of how many we do in total, we're going to call throughput. So throughput is if I measure over some amount of time, how many do I get done? Another way we can measure throughput is by saying, how long is it between when I finish each unit of laundry. So here we have a little less than an hour between each time we finish a load of laundry. It's not the case that we can actually do a load of laundry in less than an hour. It's just the case that that's, like, if you're just looking at what's coming out of our laundry factory here, you just see every hour, a little less than every hour, they have a new load, even though it takes longer to do each one. Note that because when things get started, we're waiting behind the slowest thing, behind our dryer, that I can measure this in other places. I have this amount of time between when I finish loads and the same amount of time between when I start them. And that just naturally happens because whatever is the slowest piece ends up determining the speed of everything. Everyone has to wait in line behind it. Everyone after it only comes when it happens. And it doesn't matter if that slowest part is our second step or our first step or our last step. And this means that if you're measuring throughput, you don't need to say, gosh, when do things finish? You can look anywhere, as long as the system is in what I'll call a steady state, that we aren't at this beginning period here, where we didn't have this waiting for the dryer. But after things are started, which is, for a processor, essentially all the time, that's what you can measure anywhere. And so often we'll measure this not in time between finishes, but as a rate. So we'll say we get some number of things done, loads in this case, and a processor will say instructions, and probably not per hour, because that would be a very, very large number. But we'll measure this as a rate. We could also measure latency as a rate, but we usually won't because that's pretty confusing, given that we actually are thinking about single things we put in inputs. But we can, you have to know, to know which one, you have to be told, are we caring about throughput, how much we get done overall, or are we caring about latency, how much each individual one takes. And yeah, we'll get the same number no matter where we measure. So just figure out what the easiest place to measure is if you have to figure out throughput. Okay, so this is pipelining. It shows us sort of our performance improvements, but we aren't applying it to a circuit, and there's some details I'm leaving out here that we actually need to deal with in a circuit. So let's talk about what we need to do to pipeline a circuit and also why it's going to be the case that pipelining actually helps us. And we have to think a little more than perhaps we have been about what our components that build up the circuit are actually doing over time. So let's take this circuit here, which multiplies a number times 3 by adding it a bunch of times. This is perhaps the not most efficient way of doing that, because we can do a bit shift for the first add, but it will be an example. And what we can say is that, well, this is going to take some amount of time from when we put in a value A until when this 3 times A output is stable. So the way things like adders are going to work is that we say that they don't depend on the clock cycle. So we put in a value, and after some amount of time, because they're physical things which need time to respond to signals that change, their output is going to be stable. It's going to have the value we care about. So we can think of this, that we put in a value 7, and after that value is stable on the inputs to this adder here, then the adder is going to start working. That things in it are going to change over time. And after some amount of time, in this diagram, 50 picoseconds, that's what PS stands for, we're going to have a stable output. So here, after 50 picoseconds, now this 2 times A wire has the value 14. And in this time over here, where I have these dashed lines, I'm representing that, well, there's some value on the wire because it has a voltage. It's a physical thing. You can't put nothing on it. And that value isn't stable because the adder's working, we're getting some sort of intermediate results, where like not all the carrying is done or something like that. Like it's not useful, but there is some value that's changing there, and we don't want to use it yet because we haven't waited long enough to get our results. So after we have this 14 here, and we still have this 7 input to the second adder, now the second adder can start actually doing the computation we want. And we're saying that it's also going to take 50 picoseconds from when it has its value stable until when it's going to have a stable result. So over this time, you know, first its value is changing because its input is still changing, so of course its output will still be changing. And then its inputs are stable, but it's working on doing the calculation, and we'll see intermediate values where like things like carries like aren't fully taken care of yet. But after that an additional 50 picoseconds, we have our final result of 21. And we can see the same sort of waste that we saw in the laundry example, that our first adder, we only really have it doing work during the first 50 picoseconds. After that, we don't actually care much about what it's doing. Like, it's not doing any computation. So we're going to want to take advantage of that to do pipelining. So the assumption here is that I want to multiply times 3 a lot of times, so I care about throughput. So what we're going to do, like in the laundry example, is going to make things slower for each individual multiplication times 3, but we're going to get more of them done. And in particular, we're basically going to say that after this first adder is finishing doing that a plus a, we're going to give it the next a we care about, next thing we want to multiply times 3, and we're going to start that right away, rather than having it sit basically doing nothing here and wasting that time. And we know we can get away with this also because the second adder has the same problem. The second adder, you know, it does something for only half of this 100 picoseconds. And that's going to repeat over and over again if we were computing the values repeatedly. So right now, we have something where we get 100 picoseconds latency, and also we get 10 results per nanosecond, you know, based on what we have here. So if we're using this to do lots of computations without pipelining, we're getting that rate. So we'll talk a bit about what the actual rate we get with pipelining. Let's look at what the diagram looks like. So right now, conceptually, what's going to happen is that we put in, say, 7, then we get our intermediate result of 14 halfway through our 100 picoseconds, and then after 100 picoseconds, we get a result of 3 times A. You may notice that there's this little detail here that turns out not to really be a detail that we need to deal with, which is, well, I get my result of 3 times A, what do I do with it? As soon as I put in another value, the inputs are going to start to change, and I won't have that result anymore. So we actually are going to have to worry about, well, I need to put this value somewhere. And it turns out that that's not going to be quite free. But we'll talk about that in a bit. So we do the same thing after 100 picoseconds. We put in our second value, and we 17, multiply it times 2 to get 34, and then we get a result, and so on. We put in this big sequence of values, so every 100 picoseconds we're pumping out result of multiplying times 3. And what we want to end up getting is something like this, that we're going to put in a value 7, then we're going to get 14 as an intermediate result. And once we have that result, once we're done using the first adder, right away we're going to put in the next value. So in the terms of what our processor is doing, we're executing multiple instructions at once. We're doing the first part of the 17 instruction and the second part of the 7 instruction. Here are all our instructions, our numbers to multiply times 3, not actual like interesting work. And then we got our result of 3 times A, and somehow we're going to have that be stable, you know, stored somewhere, so we can actually have that value available to us, while right away we get to put in this value, this next value 4. And also, you might remember from our circuit that, well, we need, you know, we have this intermediate result 14. Previously, that was just the output of the adder. And if we don't do anything, well, similarly, when we put in our new value 17, well, that the output of the adder will change immediately. So in order to implement this in our circuit, we need to store these intermediate results somewhere. Because when we use the adder, you know, when we change its input, its output will change. And this means, like in this previous diagram here, when I told you, well, it's not, the adder's not doing anything here, well, it was. It was storing a value for us, keeping a value stable. So we're going to have to add something else to do that work now that we're adding pipelining. And that something else is going to be registers. So our typical pipeline circuit, what we're going to do is we're going to divide it up into these steps. And between each step, we're going to have registers. And the purpose of the register is to kind of buffer the results. That we have this register here, which takes an intermediate result of 2 times A and outputs it while its input is changing because it's preparing for the next step. The input is from the following instruction to our circuit, the next number to multiply times 3. But while that input is changing, it can still output the old value. I guess I should talk a bit about the notation on this slide. So T plus 0 means that register is going to hold the value from time T. And while that's happening, this A register will hold the A value from time T plus 1. And this one will hold the value from time T plus 2. Because we're doing multiple multiplication times 3 at a time, we're going to have copies of the values to multiply from different input times. So for example, while I'm have here the value 7 being output on this wire, I'm going to have input my nukes value 17, and that's going to be what's coming out of this register. So we have 2 different A's, so we actually are going to need to disambiguate between which one do we mean. Do we mean the one that we just started adding, multiplying times 3, or the one that we have already done the first step of multiplying times 3 for. But these registers now give us the timing we want. They let us have the add do its work, and when the add is done, rather than depending on the add continuing to output that value like we were before, we're going to have a rising edge of the clock. So the register is going to read its input and store the next value. So on this picture here, you know, this is a rising edge of the clock signal. So this is what our clock signal is looking like. So we just need to make our clock signal be long enough that the adders have time to do their work so that we have that rising edge right after the value is already stable. And as a processor designer, we're going to figure out how long does this adder take, and we're going to set our clock cycle length appropriately. So any questions about what's going on here? So I know this sort of issue is a common source of confusion. So walk through
the clock cycle.
Okay, so at our start, we just had a rising edge of the clock. So coming into here beforehand, I guess I'll do, so here at time one, we had the value 7. And after the rising edge of the clock at time 2, now the value 7 is being output there. And this means that somewhere like around here, we have the value 14 get outputted. And then after the next rising edge of the clock at time 3, that means we have 14 coming out of this register because it stores its input, the rising edge of the clock. And at the same time, this 7, which was sitting on the input to this blue register just below it, becomes the output there. And so that's the execution of our multiply 7 times 3 instruction so far. And at the same time we're doing that, at time 3, so at time 2, we were inputting our next thing to multiply times 3, which was 17 here, and that means at time 3, we have 17 being output. The next piece of work is starting already. Help. So that's the procedure we have. I guess one of the pieces of confusion is thinking about what registers do. The way I like to think about it is we have a rising edge of the clock, they copy their input to their output. And we have this sort of lockstep thing where our clock cycle, it synchronizes the steps of our different instructions, so every instruction advances to the next step all at once. Everything in this diagram shifts over, like shifts down, as you can see. Yes? What is time? So you can the T there represents like a cycle number. So I'm saying that if during clock cycle 17, T equals 17, we have the value for 3 times A from cycle 17, at the same time we have the value for 2 times A from cycle input on cycle 18. Yes?
Does the register, the blue register, wouldn't it read 7 since the first cycle, or is it clocked in such a way that it only reads 7 cycles?
So the question is, which blue, the first register, the register that's leftmost?
T plus 1.
The T plus 1, when will it read its value? So these all in this class, all our registers are rising clock edge registers. They only do things in a rising clock edge. So it's going to have this, so only at, in this case, I have this labeled as time 3, it's going to change, its output's going to change to 7 in this diagram. Before that, this diagram doesn't actually tell us what it's doing. Presumably there's something there, but we don't care about it in this picture. Yes?
Is it true that when the input for an ALU changed, the output will change almost immediately?
So the question is it true that when the input for the ALU changes, the output will change almost immediately? I'm sure it depends on the design of the ALU. In this class, our ALUs don't depend on the clock cycle, but we're not specifying anything besides that they take a certain amount of time to produce a stable output. So everything else, we're just saying the value may or may not be changing, and as a processor designer, we need to assume the worst and assume that the value is going to change in a way which messes things up if we like try to say, well, we're just going to assume that nothing will change in this first 10 nanoseconds. We're not going to do that. Yeah.
In the upper left there, where it said like 1, 7, 2, 17, what's the top right one up there?
The top right, this one? Here?
No, the next one.
This is saying at time 2, this is 7. The output of this register is 7. This is 2 right after that first rising edge of the clock. Is that clear? I probably should have color coded these, but didn't think of that when drawing. Okay. So this is our timing. So one thing you may have noticed if you stared carefully at this slide is that this picture, we have something that takes a little more than 100 picoseconds. We make things slower. And there's only one thing I added to the circuit that could make things slower, and that's these registers. So what the registers are doing is they actually take time. So just like our adder, like it doesn't add things instantaneously, it takes some amount of time to produce a stable result. That's the one we actually want. Our registers have some amount of time they need to act. And so this is sort of my very simplified version of how registers at work as far as how we have to use them in our processor. So we have a register here, and we have our standard. It takes an input, and at the rising edge of the clock, that becomes its output. And it only cares about the input conceptually just when that rising edge happens. But this is a physical thing, and we can't actually do things instantaneously. So it's not actually instantaneous that the register both reads that value from its input and sends it to its output. So we have some amount of time before the rising edge of the clock during which the input must not change. If we have the input be changing during that, the register won't behave appropriately and might output the wrong value or get into some bad state. So we have this amount of time where we need to ensure that we set our clock signal such that the adder's output is not changing during that window, when the adder is what's connected to the register. We also have some amount of time after the rising edge of the clock during which the register's output changes because, well, it can't change from 0 volts to 3 volts right instantaneously. That's going to take some amount of time. So there's some period of time afterwards during which we expect the output to be changing, and we have to add that to the extra time we need to wait in addition to how long the adder takes once we give it an input to produce an output. And the total of these two types of times, we're going to call the register delay. And the register delay is typically like much smaller than the amount of time to do like an addition, but it's going to end up being significant because we're going to want to divide up our computations into really little pieces. And this register delay is going to be a constraint in that, because we need to store the results to pass them to the next phase rather than relying on our adder just keeping outputting it, because we want the adder to do something else and other components similarly. So we're going to have problems with this register delay. Yes?
Is the delay a constant, or does it depend on the type of constant?
So the question is, does the delay a constant? So in this class, we will assume that the delay depends on the design of the register. And you'll be told what the delay is because this is not a register design class. So, other questions about our register delays? And so, this register delay is the reason that we expect that when I divide that circuit into have this pipeline where we do one stage to the next, we're going to have a little bit of extra time for this register delay. And that's why it's not exactly 100 picoseconds. So for example, let's say our register delay is 10 picoseconds. So we need 10 picoseconds in every clock cycle, a little bit at the beginning for the register output to change to its new value, and a little bit at the end for the register to have time to read a stable value. And that means that we have our first register here, which conceptually takes 10 picoseconds. Then we have 50 picoseconds to do an add, then 10 picoseconds to do our second register operation, then 50 picoseconds, and so on. And during each clock cycle, we need a value to go through a register and to the next register. Alternately, we can say we need a value to come from a register and through the next register. It doesn't matter that that's the work that needs to get done in the clock cycle. You can also look at it as we need to get a value to get from a register and halfway through the other one from register. But you'll get the same amount of time either way, that we'll have to do the work of the stage plus some register delay, either before or after. You can think of it either way, you'll get the same number, because we're just thinking of register delay as a single number that includes both the beginning and end of cycle part. and all our values are going to come from registers and go to registers. And you think of our processor, well, the register where everything starts is like the PC. We get a value from the PC, and that's when we start acting. So here, we have 60 picoseconds to do each stage, and that's going to determine our throughput. Remember, I told you that if we want to measure throughput, we can look anywhere and just say, how often do things finish or go start at this point? And that's going to be the same everywhere when things are in a steady state, so that's going to tell us our throughput. So if we know we have one thing every 60 picoseconds at this point, we also have one thing every 60 picoseconds coming out of here. So with one operation every 60 picoseconds, that's 16 billion operations a second. So any questions about how you figure out this timing? Yes?
Does the 50 come from clocks?
So the question is, where does the 50 come from? So, and does it come from the clock speed? So the 50 comes because I just told you earlier that each of these adders takes 50 picoseconds. I just made that arbitrary choice. So this has a relationship to the clock speed, because what must be happening is that we're going to set our clock speed so every 60 picoseconds we have a rising edge of the clock. But this is something that the person who builds the circuit is going to be responsible for doing. They're going to have to look at this and say, I know this adder takes 50 picoseconds, I know these registers take 10 picoseconds, so I know I need to have a clock rising edge every 60 picoseconds. And they're going to set that time. And in this class, we're going to assume that they set the time as best they can. They could set it larger. And usually they're going to set it, have some, you know, slack on those measurements. You know, maybe the register delay is really like 5 picoseconds, but sometimes like your hardware doesn't get built quite right, so you're going to add an extra 5. That sort of thing does happen in real processors. But we're going to assume the clock speed is set, for the most part, to the best it can be set to. And the way that happens is that someone did the analysis to figure out how long does this take, and chose the clock speed deliberately to do that, to make that happen. Yes?
So why do you can measure this throughput anywhere? Like if you had an ad in the memory, then it would be different.
So we can measure the throughput anywhere as long as we're measuring the rate at which things go through there. So we'll talk a bit about what if things are uneven in a second, which is an issue you should be concerned about. But if I'm just looking at what actually happens, I can look at, if I see something every 60 picoseconds on this wire, I'm also going to see it on this wire, is the way you should look at it. That doesn't mean that just because this is 50 picoseconds means that we can do that, though. And we'll see some cases where that doesn't happen, because something else might make it be slower. Because it's going to depend on what we can set the clock rate to. Yes?
So when people like overclock their CPU, what does that do?
So the question is, what does overclocking CPUs mean? So CPUs have some clock rate suggested by the manufacturer. And the manufacturer has done this sort of analysis where they said, I use this adder, I use these registers, and they looked all over their processor and figured out what's the amount of time things should take. And they set a clock rate based on that. And they don't do this that precisely because hardware manufacturing processes aren't actually that consistent. So they set the clock rate with some slack because, you know, the circuit will be produced a little differently each time, and it might be a bit slower or faster depending on things. So they set the clock rate to be something that they're pretty sure is safe. They even do things where they'll, after they make a bunch of chips, they will test them, run some very thorough tests, and try to figure out what clock rate can this handle consistently, and set the clock rate based on that. So when you're doing overclocking, which some people do, This means that you're just ignoring that recommendation and setting something higher. And because they have this slack and they're, you know, they want to be conservative, they don't want to make you a processor which sometimes doesn't do floating point multiplies correctly, they're going to set that conservatively, and often there will be room for error. And so when there is room for error, you'll get a faster CPU. When there isn't, you'll get a CPU that does the wrong thing. But that's taking advantage of the fact that in the real world, this calculation isn't as nice and precise as on these slides. Yes?
What's the worst case scenario of something going wrong when you overclock CPU?
What's the worst case scenario of something going wrong? I mean, I think it's just that you can get garbage values anywhere.
Okay. But that could affect the operating system.
Yes, yes. You can get garbage values anywhere, including all over memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it will crash. I think the usual outcome is you get spurious crashes. Especially since my impression is that it affects like mostly certain types of calculations which are likely to be the slowest thing. Okay, so this is our simple pipeline. We did the straightforward thing. I had two adders. It was obvious that one was doing work at one point, one was doing work at the other. Often we'll have cases where we want to do more pipelining than is obvious. So let's have a proposal here. So I'd like to get more work done per unit time. So previously I was getting one thing done every 60 picoseconds, and I want to get more done, so I'm going to divide up my work not into two pieces, but I'm going to divide it up into four pieces. And the way I'm going to do this is I'm going to say, well, the adder has some intermediate result halfway through, so I'm just going to put a register there. I'm going to put a register halfway through, and I'm just going to store some partial results. And at the same time, I'm going to need to put a register to store the value, the original value of A that we're passing on to the second adder. And similarly, during my second adder, I'm going to put a register there that's going to store partial results in between. I'm going to say, I know my ALU must have some sort of partial results. Probably I can do this. So let's look at how much this helped me. So if you remember before, we did about 16 billion operations per second. And let's say that the way we did this is that we have our 10 picosecond register. And let's say we divided up our adders in half. So we have this 25 picoseconds of calculation, then we store the result in a register, which takes 10 picoseconds, then we get our result out with 25 picoseconds. So one thing that's obvious is that, well, we've added this bunch of extra time as far as the latency goes. That now we have two additional register delays in each operation, and we already added one in the middle. So we've made it slower as far as if we're measuring how long it takes to multiply one value times three. But that's not really what we care about, presumably. If we're doing this, we care about how we're multiplying lots of values times three. So what should the throughput be now? So figure that out. Check with your neighbor. Now that I've done this, what should my throughput be? Okay. So Okay, who has an answer? Like to share? No one? Yeah.
Two operations.
So two every 70? Or one every 35? Yes. And the way you figure that out is you say, well, we need to get a value through a register, and no matter where we look, through 25 picoseconds of computation. And that's the slowest thing you have to worry about. So we're going to end up with one every 35 picoseconds, or about 28 billion operations per second. So it seems like we got a lot better. You remember before, we were at 16. So we went from 16 G to this, which is a bit less than 2x faster. So 2x faster would be 32. Okay. So this seems like an improvement, but this provokes some questions. So one question is, well, what's the limit of this? Can we keep doing this? And the other question is, you just made some really weird assumptions about how adders work. Can you, really? Did they work that way? So let's talk about the first issue. So let's assume that our world is nice and our adders, we can just make a line anywhere and get our these partial results that we want. So how much faster can we make things? And the way to look at it is, well, you know, we started out where we got 100 picoseconds and 10 picoseconds of register delay. So we had 110 picosecond cycle time. When we divide our work up exactly in half, we get 50 and 10, so 60. Then we get 33 and 10 if you divide it up into thirds, which didn't show, but probably we could do that. And at the limit, let's say we divide it up into 100 evenly sized pieces. So that seems really tricky, but let's say we can do that as sort of our ideal scenario. In that case, we have 11 picoseconds per cycle. And conceptually, we're spending almost all of our time every cycle having the register do its thing. Like we're doing some really, really simple operation and then having registers read and write values. And we're just, and you know, we can make it half a picosecond, but we're still getting very just about 10 picoseconds. So if you look at the speed up, we got something like this, where this here I'm showing the time per completion. So this is the amount of picoseconds to do each cycle. And initially, you know, for, well, we're bounded by a register delay, and initially we get not quite a 2x speed up by doubling our number of stages. So we have, instead of one stage, we had two stages, we divided it in half, and we made it 1.8 times faster. Not two, two would be sort of the ideal, but we have this register delay, which was initially just 10% of our cycle, and now is 20. And when we're getting to these high number of stages, well, we go from 14 to 15 stages, and because this register delay is so big, you know, we'd get this teeny extra speed up. Yes, assuming we can divide things like this, it's still faster. But we just get this teeny extra speed up. And we're just going to asymptotically approach this register delay as far as what our cycle time is. And the other way of looking at it is our throughput in operations per second. So this is like usually what you quote in your processor, how many instructions can I run per second or nanosecond? And we get, similarly, we have our 1.8x improvement from adding our first stage, and then we're getting this little increase. And again, this is going to be asymptotically bounded by our rate of register updates. Our register delay is going to determine our minimum cycle time, and with that minimum cycle time, we have this 100 operations per nanosecond throughput. So it's never going to go above there. It's going to asymptotically approach it. So any questions about how this analysis works? So you see we have these diminishing returns. So the other thing we have to worry about is, well, can we do this? And, well, we probably can find some intermediate results in our adder, but maybe we can't divide things up evenly. You know, maybe we can't figure out a way to get it, have it take exactly 25 picoseconds, and maybe we have to divide it up a little unevenly because the adder, you know, has some structure, and there's places where it's convenient to get the value out and places where it's not. So let's say we divide up our adder into a piece that's 30 picoseconds and 20. So what's the throughput after we do this? Talk with the neighbor to check, make sure you agree. Someone want to volunteer an answer? No.
Would it be one instruction for 40 picoseconds?
Yes. So the answer is one per 40 because we're dependent on the slowest part. So remember with the dryer, everyone had to wait in line. We have the same issue here, that when we set our cycle time, we need enough time for the value to come out of this register, go through this 30 picosecond part of this adder and into that register. So we're gonna end up having a 40 picosecond cycle time, which means that we're gonna get not 28 billion operations per second, but 25, because we can't split this up evenly. And this is a very common thing when we deal with real circuits, is that we can't just make a dividing line anywhere we like. We end up having to make these compromises where things are divided unevenly. Maybe it's even worse and like the second part also isn't 20, it's like also 30 because we had some extra work on both ends that we couldn't split up exactly. So we end up with some uneven division. And that's gonna make our diminishing returns worse. So not only are we limited by the register delay, but we're going to have a slightly uneven division as we try to add more and more cycles. We're going to try to be clever about it to make this close, but we're going to end up a little bit off, and that's going to end up making our returns a lot worse. So, you know, we might, when we divide it up into three pieces, we don't have 33 picoseconds, but we have 40 and 30, 40, 40, and 30. But that means now that, you know, it's not essentially a third the time, it's essentially half the time. Yes?
Does a faster cycle mean more latency?
Does a faster cycle mean more latency? So our latency is the time, if you just go across this and add up everything. So the time for the cycle doesn't per se tell you what the latency is like. But the number of stages is very related to the latency. And typically when we're making our cycle faster, a lot of the reason we might be doing it is to have more stages and take advantage of that. So there's a correlation, but it's not caused by the faster cycle. There's this common design of wanting more stages, which both causes us to choose to have a faster cycle and have higher latency.
Because on the images we saw, there were more clock registers, so more register delay.
Yes, and that's because we have more stages, which is, you know, a reason to have a faster cycle, but it doesn't mean that if I could just make my cycle time twice as high without adding more stages, that would decrease the latency. Okay, so you may notice I called these stages, and I talked about instructions, and we haven't actually seen anything which looks like instructions, but you might guess that, well, we talked about these conceptual stages for seek, maybe this is the reason for it, and it is. So we have this conceptual order for how our seek processor works, and we're going to use this division now to do something that actually changes the order things happen in hardware. We're going to turn these into pipeline stages. So we're going to separate these into steps. We do one thing, then the other, and in between we put values in registers. Registers we're going to call pipeline registers. So right now, in our single cycle processor, the one you'll implement fully after break, or maybe before break if you get that homework done early, we have writes all happen at the end of the cycle. We've got this in this conceptual order so we can work on one piece at a time, but right now there's three different parts where we have writes, and all those writes actually happen at the same time because, remember, the rising edge of the clock is when our components physically change values. And our reads, we have this combinatorial logic style reads where we put in a value and just like an adder, they output the appropriate value being read. If you put in a register number, they output the register value corresponding to that number, and so on. Like an adder, if you put in two values to add, outputs the sum. So we're going to change this to actual pipeline stages, and that means that we're going to get rid of this sort of writes happen all at once. We're going to actually separate those. But first we're going to need to make a slight change to these stages. And the big change is that we're going to have 5 and not 6. And we're going to do this by merging our fetch and PC update. And the reason we want to put PC update, which previously we listed at the end, we wanted it at the beginning, and we really need it at the beginning because we want to start the next instruction right away. Otherwise, you know, we have 5 stages, but our timeline looks like fetch something, decode, execute, memory write back, PC update, and then fetch. Like, why are we bothering pipelining? We're wasting all this time where we could be fetching and things like that, using the components, you know, using our instruction memory and so on. So instead, we want a timeline where we fetch plus PC update, and then in the next cycle, we decode that instruction while fetching the next one. We want to always keep that instruction memory doing some work. So we want to figure out what PC to pass to it as soon as possible. And this is a general pattern you'll see in a pipeline design, that one of the most important things to do early in your pipeline is make sure you have work to do later. Like everything else, we can kind of wait, it's urgent to do that. And that's why we're going to merge those two together, and we're going to try to compute our PC early. And you might realize, as we'll talk about in a couple classes, that this is a bit problematic for some instructions, like return. And we'll talk about what we do about those later. But in the common case, we read the instruction memory, we look at the opcode, we add the length of the instruction, and compute our next PC. And we do that all along with the fetch. So any questions about sort of these stages as pipeline stages? Okay, so as I said, we're gonna actually do this in order. So we're actually gonna, in the first clock cycle, when we run an instruction, we're gonna fetch it, then we're gonna have some registers store the values we fetched, and then in the next clock cycle, we're actually gonna read the register file, and so on. So let's look at a simplified example, and let's look at our CPU, which only adds values. So I'm going to highlight, first of all, what parts of this circuit are the different stages. So we have our CPU, where we have our PC register, and to execute instructions, we read it from the instruction memory, we find the register numbers, we read the two registers, add them together, and input the result of the add to the register file along with one of those register numbers. So it stores the result at the rising edge of the clock. So I'm starting out with a single cycle processor that implements this. And I'm just going to highlight where each of my stages is. And this is one way we can think about turning something into a pipeline, just like I started with my multiply times three circuit, and I'm just going to divide it up into pieces that I'm going to want to be a particular pipeline stage. So my first piece is my fetch plus PC update, which we decided is our first pipeline stage, the way our book divides things. So here's our PC update. We take our PC, since we only execute adds, we just add two. If we had multiple kinds of instructions, we need to take the output of the instruction memory and use that to decide how much to add. So that's our PC update. And we have our fetch, which is this instruction memory. And that's conceptually going to be part of this first stage. So we're going to say all these are part of the first stage, these physical components. Our next stage is our decode stage. This is where we read the register file. So in our decode stage, we take our register numbers, read them, get our outputs. Then we have our execute stage, where we actually do the ALU operation. In this case, it's always adding. And finally, we have our write back stage, where we write the values. So in our textbook stages, there would also be a memory stage. This simplified example, our add instructions don't use the data memory, so we're just going to get rid of it entirely. So I want to turn this into a pipeline processor. And we have a bit of a problem as far as doing what we did before. So before, I just said, I have a stage here, a stage here. I'm just going to put registers between it. So we have something strange going on here, that we have a signal which goes from fetch to write back. And if we just say, drew a line, say right here, and put registers across that, we have a bit of a problem. That if our first instruction is say, add RAX RBX, we'd be sending RAX RBX and RBX there. We'd be deciding from that instruction both what to read and what to write for something which was two instructions earlier. That above it we had our add R8, R9, and some other instruction in between. And we'd have here R8 plus R9. We'd be writing that value to RBX. That would be a problem. So we don't want to do that. So we're going to have this fix to avoid this problem. And this is, so our rule is that we want every signal to go from one stage to the following one, except when we don't. And right now, we don't have any reason not to do that. So we're just going to take a signal that goes from fetch to decode, decode to execute, execute to write back, and never anywhere else. So we're going to change this signal that skips over our decode and execute stage, and we're going to just rewire it to go directly to our decode stage instead, and then to the execute stage, and then to the write back stage. And now that I've done that, now I can follow the strategy where I just draw a line between each of the stages and add registers along that line. So I'm just going to draw these lines that separate the stages, and everything that crosses that line needs to have a register, because we're going to want to be computing new values at the same time we're outputting the older ones. Yes?
Does it also work to just keep the original wire and put more registers as a buffer?
Yes, so it would also work to have a bunch of registers. It's equivalent to having a bunch of registers, because it doesn't matter the shape I've actually drawn the wire. So I'm doing this to make it clearer what's in what stage. Because conceptually, when we do that, we'd be like drawing a little bit of, we have like a little decode stage here and a little that's also there. I'm trying to put all the stage in one cohesive part. Okay, any questions about this? Yes? So what's the slowest part? We haven't given you enough information to know. Realistically, probably the instruction memory. And therefore the fetch stage. But we haven't given you enough information to know. Maybe we have a really, really slow register file. Maybe your adder works by just using a plus one operation over and over again. Okay. So once we do that, we have these registers here, and that's what we're left with. So we added these registers, we have these stages, and I'm going to often want to refer to the registers that separate the stages. And the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to call them by the names of the two stages they separate. So I'm going to say that the registers that separate fetch and decode are the fetch decode registers. The registers that separate decode execute are the decode execute registers. And the registers in this case that separate execute and write back, because we have no memory stage, are the execute write back registers. I also kind of have this extra thing I can think of as a register that separates two stages, this weird case, which is my PC. And I can think of that as a fetch-fetch register, that it goes from fetch of one instruction to fetch of the next instruction. And this is a deliberate case where we aren't sending a value for an instruction to its next stage, we're sending a value for our instruction to the next instruction. We're telling the next instruction what to do. That's why we're violating our rule that signals go from one stage to the following stage. So let's look at how an instruction gets executed in this. So I have two add instructions here. And let's start by executing them. So initially, let's say our PC contains the address of the instruction I've labeled 1, IR809. So what's going to happen is that our PC is outputting the address of 1. It goes into the instruction memory. And our instruction memory outputs the IR809 instruction. And at the same time, our PC output, we add 2 to it, we get the address of instruction 2. And out of this split logic here, that means we have the value 8 on the input to this pipeline register, and the value 9 here. We've read the two register numbers, and we have them sitting on the inputs to our pipeline register. So we have our first rising edge of the clock when we go from the fetch stage to the decode stage of this first instruction. We're going to be outputting those values in the next cycle. So I compute these values. I have these inputs sitting in front of these pipeline registers here. I have my next PC sitting on my PC register input. I have my two register numbers sitting on that, sitting on the fetch decode inputs. So then I have a rising edge of the clock, and now my fetch decode registers are outputting the register numbers 8 and 9. And my PC is now outputting the address of instruction 2. And that means my instruction memory will output the value of instruction 2. So I've prepared my inputs to the fetch decode register at the same time as I'm outputting the register numbers for instruction 1. And actually having the instruction the register file work on reading those registers for me. So now, coming into here, I have this register up here, which I use, remember, to figure out what register I write to. So that's going to have just a copy of register number 9. It's corrected directly there. And these two registers down here are where we're going to put the values we read from the register file so we can add them later. So then my instruction 1, we have these values prepared here, and at the same time we have 10 and 11 prepared in the inputs to the fetch decode registers. So while we're adding register 8 and 9 here, we can read register 10 and 11 in the register file. So then we advance, having made those preparations, and because we had the value sitting on the input, we have register number 9 being output from this register that will get forwarded eventually to the register file to write register 9. And we have the values of register 8 and 9 from the register file here. And at the same time, we're now outputting the numbers 10 and 11, so we can read those registers at the same time we're doing the addition for the first instruction. And at the end of this cycle, so we'll have the sum here, so we'll have R8 plus R9 sitting on this input, and we'll have register number 9 here, sitting here, and so when the cycle advances, we'll end up storing R8 plus R9 while we're adding R10 and R11. Any questions on what's going on here? The general idea is our instructions march forward and the next instruction in the program marches behind them. Everything in lockstep. And what you can think of the job of each stage is just to prepare the values for the next stage for the most part. Obviously, we actually do some work, like our write back stage. We're not preparing the values for the next for another stage that follows it, but we're preparing the inputs to the register file for the end of the clock cycle. So if we have a bunch of instructions, another way I can write this is I can say, during cycle 0, what is being output by each of these registers? And you can see that our first instruction, we output 0 from the PC for it. In the next cycle, we're outputting 8 and 9 from our fetch decode registers while we're reading the register file. In the following cycle, we've read the register file, so we're outputting the values we read, and we also have this pipeline register because we need to remember where are we going to write the results. We need to pass that through. And then finally, after we do the addition, we store that value in a pipeline register when we've done the addition, so we can write it to the register file. And each instruction proceeds down like this. And ultimately, because we have four pipeline stages, we end up doing four things at once. That we're reading from address 6 while we're reading registers 12 and 13 for a different instruction, while we're adding 1,000 and 1,100 for get a different instruction, while we're storing 1,700 for the first instruction. All these are happening at once as the instructions proceed down the pipeline. So, any questions on what this diagram is showing? Because I'm going to want to talk about what happens in our pipeline, because we're going to talk about some cases where we have to do some special things. I'm often going to try to show what's going on with multiple instructions in this way. I'd like to make sure you understand how to read what's going on. Okay, no questions? Okay. So let's talk a bit about performance briefly. So here, let's say I tell you how long the components take. So in this case, I'm telling you this add2 takes 80 picoseconds. This instruction memory takes 200. Reading from the register file, so going from source A, going out, okay, the value, takes 125 picoseconds. Adding takes 100 picoseconds. And writing the register file, we'll say, takes 125 picoseconds. So if we have pipelining, we have to think of what's the slowest thing here. Without pipelining, we have to also think about what's the slowest path. So without pipelining, we're saying we have to take a value out of the PC, go through the instruction memory, we didn't have these pipeline registers, just go directly to the register file, go through the adder, and then go right to the register file. So we add up all these operations. Notice that we don't actually add up the add2 because, well, we need to do that, but we don't need to wait for it because we can do it while we're reading the instruction memory. When we're talking about pipelining, we need to worry about each stage. We say, how long does it take to do the fetch stage? And that's going to be 200 picoseconds because we need to go through the instruction memory to get to here. We also need to add 2, but that's faster. That doesn't determine the speed. The slowest thing in the stage determines the speed. And all the other stages are faster. The register file read, we need to go through the register file to the end. So since the fetch stage is slowest, this means that we're going to set our clock rate to once every 200 picoseconds plus however long the PyPI registers take, whatever our register delay is for both the PC and all the other pipeline registers. And that's going to determine our throughput. And our latency is going to be that times the number of stages we have. So next time we'll talk more about special cases in pipelining, now that we've seen the common case.